to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan. It is September 11th, 2022.
What do you got, Aaron?
Well, yeah, don't get me started.
Okay. My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pappe Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Go up there and see them. They've got everything John Deere. If they don't have it, they can get it for you. They've got like 110 locations to choose from. So, like I say, if they don't have an inventory, they'll find it for you. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at pappemachinery.com.
There you go.
There you are.
And, yeah, I didn't answer because, I don't know, I drove past the studio already, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you doing? It's like, well.
I had to give her directions this morning.
He's, yeah, that never happens. He's like, we just passed it. Only been doing it for, what, 13 years?
Yeah, 13 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every Sunday morning. So, Ron and Patty Plummer here to talk about something coming up in Reading. On Tuesday, the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening to this on the archive and or you don't live in Reading, you just get some coffee. It's going to take you 2 minutes, and then we'll get back to what we were doing before.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, fire away, you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. Ron and I are really happy to be with you here, especially on September 11th. This is a big day for so many reasons, and so monumental as we look ahead of, as far as a community, what we want to do as we the people. And so an opportunity is coming to us here on Tuesday, Dr. Douglas Frank, who was actually at the original symposium in 2020 with Michael Lindell, and he saw the numbers. He saw the algorithms from the very beginning. And so now he has numbers for all the counties across the nation, basically. And he has spent the last 2 months with Seth Keschel. They've traveled throughout California. And now they have the numbers for Shasta County. So we're wanting to present that to everyone to come and hear him on Tuesday at 621 Twinview Boulevard in Reading. It's actually, if you find Waterworks Park, the road that's just west of Waterworks Park, you drive to the top of the hill and you'll be at Hillcrest. No, Hillside Church at 621 Twinview. And the doors open at 5:30. He'll be there at 6. And he has a presentation that will absolutely jaw-dropping because now we know for sure that the machines can no longer be used. What has happened to us has taken decades to get here. And now it's our Red Sea moment, and we're not going to use the machines any longer.
So have they decided to not use the Dominion machines now? Or
in some kind of counties, they have.
Yeah.
And so here we are, and it's going to be an opportunity for not only our Board of Supervisors on Tuesday morning, he's going to be there presenting to them, and then all of our elected officials going to have some time with our sheriff, and also possibly Kathy Darling. She says she's really busy that day. I said, that's okay. We're going to be on standby, and we'll be available.
Cool. Nice. Because, yeah, that's really where the whole thing, the rubber meets the road, is with the clerk.
Yep, yep. That's it.
I think one of the things that's happened over the years is that, number one, as a population, we've been conditioned just to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Actually, no one knows the rules.
But you make them up as you go, right?
Right, but I mean, people don't know the rules.
They don't know the rules.
And so when it comes to voting, I mean, in 2020, most people had no idea that the Secretary of State in the state of California didn't do what the Secretary of State at the federal level did.
Right.
They were unaware of what the Secretary of State really did.
Right.
And a lot of people have been voting for a clerk for their whole life as an adult voter. But there's usually one person running. It's usually the same person in a lot of places, which isn't a bad thing. But they didn't know what they did.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, when the election went all sideways and people had questions, they were calling, like, their members of Congress, you have to go and do something. And it's like, you do realize the federal government isn't in charge of elections, right? No.
Yeah.
People didn't know.
No, I know.
Legislators, right.
They didn't know the mail-in ballot had to be taken to the polls or they'd be put on provisionals. I mean, there are a lot of things that they must have learned in school and then just completely forgot, I guess.
Exactly.
They've been working a long time to set this up, and now it's all in place, and no matter what people do, and I would say a good portion of people just throw their hands up and go, well, we don't know what to do.
Right.
Right.
And I think we've come down to a spot where if we continue to use the machines, we've lost everything. We've lost our country.
Sure.
And that's
really
what Dr. Frank says, too. He says, when the people finally understand what's happened to us and how everything has been stolen from us with the machine, with the mail-in ballots, all these different efforts, they will take action.
Sure.
So rather than complaining, we're giving people an opportunity to get the information. We're doing canvassing and we're gathering the phantom votes. We saw them yesterday. There's a bunch. We have a lot of evidence of fraud right here in our own county. And that's why Dr. Frank has chosen to come to Shasta County. He's like, oh my gosh, it's thick and wide. You guys have got to get this information. And for some reason, all 3,000 plus counties across the nation, none of those numbers with the Secretary of State has reconciled. Every county that offers their numbers, they don't reconcile. None of those numbers make any sense. So we're just wanting to take a look at it and just give all the information. We believe people are smart enough. We the people. This whole thing has been flipped over. Thank goodness for this COVID mess, because now we know that we're in charge. Mm-hmm. There's new rules, new management. The new rules are the Constitution. The new management is us.
Yeah. Well, and the bottom line is, because I have people call me all the time and, you know, the Constitution's being shredded and it goes from there. Right. And then at the end of the conversation, and by the way, I stopped voting because it doesn't matter. Right. And I'm like, you are aware that they don't need to cheat if they can get you not to vote, right?
Right, exactly.
I'm like, you can't just not vote.
That's
that
true.
Isn't one of the choices.
Right.
So whether you love the machines, you hate the machines, they're in, they're out, they're up, they're down, volunteer to be a poll watcher or a poll worker, mm-hmm. however you want to do it. Volunteer to get involved in the process, but for heaven's sakes, you got to cast a ballot. I mean, I want them to work really hard.
Yes.
If they're going to cheat.
We go in, well, we spent lots of hours in there ourselves, and they just, we go in and,
you know, whatever people need to do to feel good about it, but you can't just sit, you can't just sideline.
Yeah.
Because the bad part is, you look at the recall of Newsom. They all signed the petition to get him recalled, and then they didn't go vote.
Right.
They didn't vote him out because people said, well, it's not going to matter. And I'm like, well, it didn't because you didn't vote.
Well, and guess what? Dr. Frank says that he was recalled. So those numbers
they
are coming out
it.
Tuesday as well.
He stole it back.
But when you look at the numbers of Republicans, if we want to just be partisan here, if you look at the numbers of Republicans that did not vote in that election, it was staggering.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
they just didn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just don't vote.
Well, the apathy, you know, has gotten to a point.
Well, they
where
think it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really apathetic because okay, you could classify it as that, but they really do care. They're just demoralized.
Sure.
And so you have you know, we have like news anchors that'll bring candidates on and say, oh, the GOP is screwing them because they're promoting somebody else instead of that person. But then when you get the detail about the district that they're in, it was Biden up 5.7 over Trump in that district. So it leans Dem. The Democrats are a real strong candidate, and the candidate that maybe they want is really extreme and isn't going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so then it's like, oh, the rhinos are in charge. Well, then, of course, all the Republicans say, oh, the Republicans are all bad, so we're not voting for them either. And it comes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we have to be a little bit smarter than
And I often say that from the rear end view, a rhino and an elephant look the same from the rear end. They both have tails and they look the same.
But the criteria that we're using for, you know, so-and-so's a rhino is like not, you know, people don't know enough in most cases about how the politics are played, and they're not looking at the detail.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't like what that person says, therefore they're a rhino. It's like, that actually isn't how that mm-hmm. works exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And 100% of the time, the Democrats vote with the Democrats. So you'll have like a Susan Collins or whatever, or Murkowski, some of these folks who will vote with the Democrats periodically. And you're going to have some that they both parties vote for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's crazy to think that, you know, the people in majority are the only ones get a bill. But.
Right. And all we're asking for is a free and fair election. And what that may mean
and that's super important.
To turn off the electronics. Go ahead, let's turn off the Dominion machines and unplug them and melt them down and make prison bars real quick.
Well, we were always able to vote on election day and have the results that night.
Right. Right.
Or first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
The results were in.
One day voting.
And now it's weeks and weeks and weeks
and
it takes to get everything adjusted.
Well, the
mail-in
votes changed everything because they send them out early. They tell everybody to vote early. It's it's all a scam.
Right.
It really, truly is a scam. Mm-hmm.
But then our guys didn't trust them, so a lot of them shredded them. So they went to the polls. If your clerk was doing their job, they can't take your mail in.
Right.
I mean, they can't just run your ballot because they can't verify your mail in ballot.
Right. You need a precinct ballot.
It isn't coming in too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so people,
it's a mess.
Yeah, if you get the mail-in ballot, you got to take it with you to the polls if you want to vote at the polls.
Right.
Right, and then they void it out or they surrender it. And so, so what we're learning is what doesn't work. And so what we want to go back to is the simplicity of one-day voting. Use a voter ID, you know, all the things, just no machines, no mail-in ballots, precinct ballot. Let's vote in our precincts.
It always
again.
Worked before.
Yeah, look at that.
It worked
pretty
well.
Yeah, let's vote like the Amish. Real simple.
Yeah.
In our garages, 1,000 in a precinct. We can cast and count them one day. We can have cameras watching. Oh, now they're counting them. You know, whatever it takes to simplify this so we know that our vote was cast and counted and chosen for the one that we chose.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know. I mean, I know a lot of people still don't trust the system, mm-hmm. and they feel like nothing's been done to change it. Right. So our next elections are going to go the same way because we got the same machines, mm-hmm. we got the same process, are going to steal it again. It's nice to know. We are working on it,
yep.
and there are some changes being made,
right.
and it doesn't necessarily have to be the same outcome.
Right, and there's a chance there may not be an election in November because this is so big. This mm-hmm. is nationwide. Every county, they're inviting the sheriffs to come in and investigate this. We may put a stop to all this until things can change. This is like Tiananmen Square when the guys would stand in front of the tanks
yeah.
and said no more, and they got crushed. You know, we're kind of like standing there, we don't want machines. We want to be able to do hand counting, precinct, you know, voting, just like they do in France. They took away their machines. They did it all in one day. Millions of people, millions of votes yep. were counted. We can do that here.
That can be done.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
So that is September 13th, 6 p.m., 621 Twinview Boulevard, which is?
It's at the Hillside Church. You go to Waterworks
Hillside
Park
Church.
And go up the hill. Very good. Thanks so much for your time.
I knew it was a church. I just didn't have the name, yeah. so I should write it down in case somebody calls or asks.
Yeah. Doors open at 5:30. Come and hear for yourself. Get the information. And then get a game plan going forward, what we can do, an action plan to make
right.
this happen.
Right.
Very
How
good.
We can actually stop the machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the key. I know that there's a number of sentiment with the Board of Supervisors. A number of them don't like them. They don't want them. But
they've signed 10-year contracts, mm-hmm. and they're on the hook for it. Mm-hmm. So they've got to figure out how to get out of that.
And whistleblowers.
Cases.
We're inviting all the whistleblowers to come forth.
And Dr. Douglas Frank is obviously a smart guy. I meant to bring that up because he's wearing a bow tie.
He's so brilliant.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
the only people who wear bow ties
amazing.
Are like wicked smart people.
Yeah.
And
super smart.
And the bow tie is multicolored
yeah.
and a bow tie. So he's
yeah.
got to be extra.
Oh,
and
he's
he is
a physicist as
yeah.
well as.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
He kind of looks like Bill Nye the Science Guy,
yeah.
only he's actually a scientist and he's not a lefty weirdo pushing global warming.
Exactly.
So mostly the same, but completely different.
Yeah.
The same, but different. Yeah. I want to invite you guys to come
yeah.
and listen.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You'd be a great voice.
I mean, Bernie that night, so I'll have to watch you on the rerun, but as they say. But thanks very much for having that, and we really appreciate it.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Absolutely. Right.
So if anybody has any questions, they can call us. Everything's at wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll post the flyer. Shoot me one more because I wrote on mine. I'll scan it and put it on the site, so you will have it.
That's
Very
wonderful.
Good, Aaron.
Thanks
All right.
so much.
Well, thanks
thanks
for coming
you guys.
In, guys.
Appreciate
yeah.
it.
Thank you, guys.
Great information.
All right, we're going to scurry to a quick break, and we're going to come back with Bruce Sackman. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Look at Billy's all over it today.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
It's funny listening to that song in high school, and here we are playing it on the radio.
Well, how old are you?
I'm wicked old. Actually, I turned 61 right after we had the first show with Mr. Sackman.
Man,
as a matter of fact,
I thought I married a younger woman.
You did.
Oh.
That makes you extra super wicked old.
How? Thanks, Aaron.
You're welcome, Bill. All right. So our guest, Bruce Sackman, he was with us on August 21st, just in case you didn't know when my birthday was. August 21st, he was with us, and he had the most, if you didn't hear that show, it's linked up on the website, it's free to listen to, and I'll put the link on this page. I'd forgotten today, but I'll put it on there. The book is Behind the Murder Curtain, and so we kind of talked about that, but then he had a whole bunch of other information he wanted to give us, but this book was specifically about when veterans hospital patients on the road to recovery suddenly die in increasing numbers. It's up to the VA special agent in charge, Bruce Sackman, to find out why. His shocking discovery rips open the hidden world of what goes on behind the bedside curtains when a killer doctor or nurse decides a patient must die. And I don't know. Anybody who watches true crime knows that that stuff actually happens. But he was special agent in charge with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Office of Inspector General. And just for people who don't deal with that stuff very often, every department has their inspector general. So he would have worked specifically on VA things. He was in the Criminal Investigations Division in the Northern Field Office until May of 2005. He did that for 32 years. And in his capacity, he was responsible for all major criminal investigations involving VA from West Virginia to Maine. And during his tenure, he was involved in hundreds of investigations involving allegations of fraud, corruption, false claims, thefts, patient assaults, pharmaceutical drugs, and suspicious hospital deaths, which kind of wound up making him, well, he wound up being a licensed private investigator in New York City specializing in healthcare-related matters and directed major investigations for a large New York metropolitan regional healthcare system after he had left the VA. So he is also the president of the Society of Professional Investigators in New York from 2010 to 2019. I bet that was a... I bet the contacts made there were super, super interesting. And he's a frequent lecturer all around the world on the idea of medical serial killers, which is something that hopefully most of us never encounter.
Yeah, if you ever end up in a hospital, don't be afraid if they pull the curtain. I mean, nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Move along. You'll be fine.
Hide under the bed.
Do you have a will?
Yank out your IV and run.
So, Bruce, you had all sorts of experience. And since it was September 11th today, you said you had experience with that. So we have no plan for what to tell us. So you can start wherever you'd like.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me back.
Really, you're such a fun storyteller. We were like, man, we could have him on every week. He could just come on and tell us stories.
Well, as you said, today is September 11th, and being a New Yorker and being in the government at the time, I do have a 9/11 story I'd like to tell because I was actually there at Ground Zero, and then I worked later going through the debris at the World Trade Center. But actually, the story for me begins, and I can't recall if it was September 9th or September 10th, but on that day, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association had an award ceremony, and they actually held it on a boat that went around Manhattan. And the award ceremony was for myself and the agents that were involved in that Dr. Swango case that we spoke about last time, that VA doctor who had murdered a number of his patients out in Norfolk, Long Island.
And just for those who didn't hear the first show yet, his nickname?
00 Swango, licensed to kill.
00 Swango. Oh, my God, you cannot make that up. So sorry.
No, sorry, you cannot make that up. So we're on the boat, and there's an award ceremony, and it's going around Manhattan. And as it's sailing around Manhattan, there's the World Trade Center. And I'm speaking to an FBI agent who was on board the boat, and he says, you see, Bruce, they tried to knock those towers down, but we stopped them, and it didn't happen. And this was September 9th or September 10th. And I remember seeing those towers all lit up, and I thought, oh, that was great. That was great. Well, it was either the next morning or the day after. I'm in my office at the VA, which is about a mile from Ground Zero. And I'm on the phone speaking to someone who's heading up my Boston office. And my assistant comes in and he says, Bruce, you know, a plane just hit the World Trade Center.
Oh,
well,
wow.
I thought, like just about everybody else, well, it must have been a small plane. It was such a beautiful, clear day. I couldn't even imagine it. He says, no, Bruce, I think you better hang up and come out and take a look at it. So we go downstairs from my building, and we have a direct view of the World Trade Center. And we see, you know, we see the fire, and, God, you can see people jumping.
Oh, my gosh. How far away were you actually from the World Trade Center?
About a mile away.
Uh-huh.
And about a mile north. And then we saw the second plane hit. And when the second plane hit, it became kind of apparent to us that this was no accident. So he said, well, what the heck do we do now? You know, what do we do? We're the Inspector General or the VA. I mean, this is not something we even think about, let alone get involved with. So my first thinking is, let's go over to the local VA hospital, which is on 23rd Street and 1st Avenue, and see if we could help. And we sat there and we waited, and only a handful of people actually showed up at that hospital. Really nothing. But what was really strange is that from my office, you could see crowds of people walking north towards Penn Station, which is on 34th Street. And they weren't screaming or yelling, and they weren't even running by the time they got my office. It looked like something out of a horror movie. Many of them were actually covered in white soot, and they were just walking in total shock. There were hundreds of people in total shock just walking north, not talking, not saying a word, just in total shock walking north. I'd never seen anything like it before. It was something out of a horror movie.
Wow.
So the next day, pack up the agents, and we go down to Ground Zero. Now, if you're familiar with the city, you couldn't get south of Canal Street because the police wouldn't allow you, and you certainly couldn't get down there without a mask and boots. But since we all were federal agents, they allowed us to go in. And I recall seeing the firemen, and some of them were just sitting there by themselves, also in total shock. And I wanted to go over and say something to them, but, you know, I couldn't get the words out. I just couldn't get the words out. I didn't know what to say to these guys. They had lost so many of their brothers. Mm-hmm. It was just such an incredible sight, and it was incredibly dangerous to be down there, too. I must tell you, there were live wires popping all over the place, and there was so much soot and dust. It was really, really a terrible, terrible sight. So, you know, what's going to be the role of the VAOIG in this? I mean, you know, we're not first responders, and we're not construction workers. So what we wound up doing, actually, is sometime later, most of the debris from the World Trade Center got shipped to a landfill in Staten Island. And it was on top of a mountain. And I remember the first time I went there, the sanitation workers at the bottom said, hey, Bruce, you're going up there? We don't even go up there. There's methane gas. It's all kinds of terrible things up there. But we went up there. And to see the debris was really incredible. You saw fire trucks that were flattened like pancakes. Can you imagine a fire truck being flattened like a pancake?
Yeah.
And all the vehicles down there, and it was terrible. And our job, along with many law enforcement people, was to go through the debris. When we first went up there, there was nothing. I mean, guys didn't even have tetanus shots. There was an Army National Guard tent, like a MASH tent, and there was practically nothing up there. By the time we left, a year later, there was so much up there, I thought they were going to build condos up there. They had so much equipment up there.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, there was nothing there. And it was extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, you could be working there, and you couldn't even hear some of the machinery, and you would turn around, and there's like a backhoe right behind you. And the federal agents, we were responsible for going through the debris of Building 7, because Building 7 was the federal building. That's where the federal agencies were in. And as you're going through the debris, you would see things like copies of tax returns. You would see personal items like old transistor radios. Occasionally, you would see a badge.
How badly damaged was Building 7?
Oh, it was completely destroyed. And luckily, I don't believe anybody actually got hurt in that building, because that wasn't one of the first buildings to come down. You know, eventually after the towers came down, some of the other buildings started to come down, and that was Building 7, which was one of the smaller buildings. So we were responsible for going through the debris, and there was a tent set up with forensic experts. And if you saw something that you thought could be a body part or you weren't sure what it was, you would actually bring it to that tent of forensic experts. They would look at the debris, and then they would make a determination as to whether it was human or not, because there were a couple of restaurants there as well. So, you know, it could be some animal, it could be fish, it could be God knows what. I mean, we really didn't know for sure. So we would bring it to the tent, and there was so much debris, and it was so dirty and filthy there that at the end of our tour, we had to turn in all of our federal vehicles. They couldn't be used anymore because all of a sudden the dirt just clinged itself to the bottom of the vehicle and it couldn't be removed. When I left that place working, I had to leave the windows of my car open because you could smell the debris. You couldn't keep the windows closed in your vehicle.
Wow.
And so I worked there on and off for a year. Couple of times a month for a year. But there were some men and women who were there every day for an entire year. I don't
wow.
know if they're still alive, to tell you the truth. I don't know if these men and women are still alive.
Sure.
I know the Secret Service and the NYPD, they had people there all the time. It was so incredibly unhealthy.
Oh, yeah. Many of those have died since. They've died from inhaling.
Exposure to all the chemicals and the...
Oh, yeah. So I go to my 9/11 physical. I just had it a week ago, in fact. Every year I go to 9/11 physical because I have some glass charge in my lungs from working there. You know, but believe me, compared to how other people suffered, I consider myself very, very lucky. Very, very lucky that's all I have. And it was an incredible story. You know, one thing the VA did, and I bet people don't know this, because there was such a lack of medical gear and equipment and trained medical personnel, the VA actually had like a mobile health unit, and we drove that unit up to the top of the mountain, and we set it up there, and VA employees were actually given tetanus shots and masks and equipment, and the VA, this is not the ID, but the actual VA hospitals themselves, really did a super job in helping. You know, and technically it wasn't directly a VA matter, but we were all in this together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it was quite an experience. And inevitably, I run into somebody who I work with who has some serious medical problems as a result of working there. Like I say, I consider myself one of the lucky ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had some friends, some coworkers that have very, very, very serious problems. So we hope to God this never happens again. And we hope that our government that keeps its eyes open and is protecting us from this happening again. But it was really a horrific experience. Even for those of us in the Inspector General community who never expected to be involved in something like this.
Was it just because you were really close? You know, you were just right there?
Yes. You know, that's certainly part of it. But almost all the IDs in the city of New York step forward in one capacity or another to help. And it was, I tell you, I actually hated going to do this work. I mean, I hated going up to Staten Island a couple of times a month and going to the top of that mountain and going through the debris. Not only was it depressing, it was very hot and unhealthy, and I would feel it in my chest for 3 or 4 days afterwards. After I worked up there in Staten Island, I would actually feel it in my chest for 3 or 4 days.
Mm.
You do what you have to do. Certainly nothing anybody ever signed up for.
Well, yeah, nobody expected anything like that, and you don't know how you'll react.
Then, you know, sometime later, I actually brought the Inspector General of the VA down there, down to Ground Zero, to look for himself. Now, he used to be the Deputy Director of the Secret Service, and I'll never forget this. He turned to me and he said, "Hey, you know, Bruce, if the FBI had been doing their job, this would have never happened." I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. You know, I don't know. But I remember him saying that to me. He was not a big fan of that agency.
he's probably having a good chuckle these days. He's probably the guy making those memes with all of them wearing the dresses from Melania Trump's closet.
Well, you know what? Since we're on the topic of FBI, I'll give you my personal opinion on that. Okay, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Yeah, we like
this
your personal opinion.
This is my personal opinion of the FBI.
Well, yeah, we have plenty of time to attack you later. Go ahead.
The FBI. You know, they're the largest federal law enforcement agency. They have some truly outstanding agents. I mean, there was one guy that I worked with. It's in the book. I think he was the best agent I ever worked with from any agency at all. But that being said, the managers set the tone.
Yes.
Okay? And if you remember... During the impeachment, when that guy Sprock, the FBI agent, got up, and that was the most arrogant and obnoxious testimony I have ever heard in my life. Well, that's what I went through sometimes in my dealing with the FBI management. Not the street agents, not the agents. But the managers, because the managers set the tone, and some managers will set the tone like, you know what, guys and girls, I want you to work with other agencies. I want them to be part of the team. I want this to be a collaborative effort. Sometimes. Some of the managers, and I can imagine this guy's book was one of them, say, hey, we're the FBI. We're better than everybody else. We don't need to work with them. We take information from them. We don't give them anything. And I used to have a case, you know, that required a number of agencies, and people would call me up and they'd say, hey, Bruce, before we get involved in this case, is the FBI involved? And I'd say, yes. And they'd say, that's nice. We're not interested.
We're
because
out.
It depended on the supervisor who sets the tone. And unfortunately, the FBI, at least then, I can't say today, but then... they didn't all have that attitude of let's all work together. And that was very harmful, I think, to a number of investigations. And I'll never forget the arrogance of some, not all, but the arrogance of some of the managers that I had to deal with. And some of, you know, in the FBI, there were some teams, some groups in the FBI that wouldn't even talk to other groups in the FBI.
That's true old leadership there.
I'm praying that things are better now and that the people that are in the leadership position now, although I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I was going to say, in imaginary land, that's probably happening.
Let's all work together.
Yeah.
Just terrible. Well, let's give us a moment to ponder that. Take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Bruce Sackman. And you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. Well, the eagle's been flying slow, and the flag's been flying low, and a lot of people saying that America's fixing to fall. But speaking just for me, and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. This lady may have stumbled, but
she ain't never failed. And if the Russians don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We're gonna put her feet back on the paths of righteousness, and then God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. In America, did you? You never did think that we'd ever get together again. We're damn sure fooled you. We're walking real proud and we're talking real loud again. In America, you never did think that it ever would happen again.
Just thought I'd do the 9/11 songs that all have swears in them.
Swears.
Just like pull them all together. Just bookend them. Get it all out of the way. Liam had a question for you. Our engineer, he was in there shooting me messages, and I was like, you ask him.
So, yeah. Bruce, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Was there a role the VA was able to play in helping workers get medical help, like post-cleanup, or was there an organization established that was able to do that?
Oh, you're talking about after 9/11?
Correct.
Oh, yeah, no, after 9/11, there was a bill passed that gave health care benefits to not only the first responders who were there, but anybody who was actually down in that area at the time. And so there's money available and there's health care available. So the health care that I get as a result of being down at 9/11 is not from the VA at all. It's a government paid-for program through private hospitals. So to Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan. Now I actually go to Stony Brook out on Long Island. But these are all programs that are paid for by the government, and they're excellent. They're really excellent programs.
Cool.
Yeah, I know that. There were plenty of people that needed help after that, that's for sure.
Oh, man, I tell you something. When I sit in the waiting room, I consider myself so lucky because I see and I hear how these other men and women are suffering as a result of this. It's heart-wrenching,
really.
And it really is. So I'm so happy that the government came out with these programs to pay for their medical care, and some of them are financially compensated as well in other ways. That's not something I need or desire, but for those people who really need it and deserve it, it's just a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Now, in the scope of things, you were where in your career path? Had you already been chasing down the medical serial killers at that point?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? It was a contest from the 90s until I retired in 2005. So, yeah, it was right in the middle of some investigations that we had involving medical serial killers and the whole host of other crimes that could be in a hospital. And there are many. I could talk about a few if you'd like. There are many crimes that occur in hospitals, unbeknownst to most people, I would say.
Okay. Go ahead and scare us.
All right. Well, look. You know what? I always say, you remember that song, There's No Business Like Show Business? I think when I think of hospitals, I say there's no business like the hospital business. You know, it's
somehow I see that as a like a Mel Brooks sort of take off when like the producers maybe.
right. But you know, seriously, it never closes. You were there when you first opened up your eyes, and you'll probably be there when you close them for good. And you know, listen, you are thousands of items from the most advanced scientific equipment on the planet to Band-Aids and diapers. And it's staffed by, you know, very highly educated and dedicated employees, many who have sworn an oath to perform their duties with compassion and integrity, and they do. You know, hospitals are part of our nation's critical infrastructure. It's the most highly regulated industry outside of the nuclear regulatory industry.
Wow.
And there are a whole host of federal and state agencies sorry to come in the hospital and do investigations and reviews. So what can go wrong? Plenty. I mean, plenty to go. Executive officers of hospitals, I have to take off my hat to them because their responsibilities are like seemingly endless. You know, every day they discuss matters of life and death, safety of patients and staff. But, you know, recently the big issue now is the security of patient information, you know, personal medical and financial data. It's got to be made impenetrable to hackers, right, in today's electronic internet-based environment. Now also you have an inventory of narcotics, right, and other drugs can be very dangerous in the hands of drug-seeking individuals. You've got all kinds of financial problems because you're not making money off of Medicare and Medicaid, that's for sure.
So well, you try to offset. And then you had all the crazy incentives for the COVID thing.
You're competing against other hospitals and universities. You're often forced to merge with other medical centers because you can't afford to make it on your own.
Right.
You hope the bidding process for all of this is good. You know, you require three bids. I hope that the bidding process is honest. Not often. Often it isn't. Then you have foreign nations and competitors who are trying to steal your research.
Yeah.
Just think about all that could go wrong. And then we throw in the serial killers, and then we throw in the nurses or doctors who may be intentionally harming people, putting aside the whole malpractice issue. And then one day you get hit with a pandemic. How's that a job for you, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the incentives for that really... It really pushed them to cheat.
It could go wrong. And I'll give you an example of some of the cases. Some of the cases I had both in the government and in the private sector. And some of them were very, very small and simple, and some of them are extraordinarily complex. You know, one of the things we was the theft of these copays. You know when you go to the doctor or hospital, you have to pay these annoying copays, you know, $25, whatever. And, you know, many times people will pay with cash and they'll get a little receipt and they'll put that receipt in their pocket. Well, we had so many cases of employees who were stealing those copays. It was really terrible. You know, something about cash that makes an otherwise honest person sometimes become dishonest.
Wow.
And we had so many cases of this where employees sometimes worked 15, 20 years and they got caught stealing copays, cash copays. And, you know, the reason for that being is that many times the hospitals who were short-staffed, they would have the same person collect the cash, post the payment, deposit the money. There was no second pair of eyes. And the next thing you know, money is missing. And I remember one case we had. The department manager, he was very, very fond of one of his employees. I think his name was Bobby, so it doesn't make a difference. And he handled these cash transactions from beginning to end, and he wanted no one to help him. He was the first person in the office and the last person to leave at the end of the day. He would never take a vacation. If he had time off, he would come into the office after hours to make certain all the transactions were completed. What a great employee, huh? All cash was supposed to be deposited with the hospital's agent cashier. Interestingly, the agent cashier had confided in me that he had never received any cash deposits from Bobby at all and assumed that the department was not collecting cash from the patients.
Wow. Sounds like Bobby got sloppy.
Yeah, well, you know what? Bobby took the hospital for $10,000 in copays, in little copays.
Like 30 bucks a crack.
$10,000. What's that?
Yeah, like 30 bucks a crack, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, because if you think about it, how many times have you paid a copay and you got that little yellow receipt and you put it in your pocket, and then if 3-4 months down the road, you saw a bill for $20 or $25 from the hospital, are you going to be able to produce that little yellow receipt? You know, most people don't.
Yeah, probably not.
That's
but
right,
there's
true.
Always somebody, bless their hearts, there's always somebody that keeps that receipt. And then we went into the hospital and they said to me, hey, Mr. Sackman, here's my receipt right here. And I remember exactly who I paid that $25 to. That guy Bobby in his department.
Uh-huh.
And that's one thing led to the next, and that's what puppy arrested and charged with stealing $10,000 in copay. But the hospitals always will collect cash because they feel that there are some people in the community that don't have credit cards and they want to have to pay by cash. So as long as they accept cash, it was a real annoying problem. You know, not a major problem, but a real annoying problem. But we had one very, very interesting, unique problem involving cash. Now, have you ever seen that wonderful movie, Coming to America, with Eddie Murphy?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Now, recall that Eddie Murphy's father, he was the king of an African nation, and in a scene very similar to that, he would enter the medical center. Now, this African king, and this is a true story, this African king was very fond of a particular physician we had in our hospital system. He would bring his family for daily visits to the physician for complete medical workups. It was great. You know, because the king was a foreign dignitary, his visit would even be preceded by an inspection by the Secret Service. So it was right out of the movie. You know, the Secret Service would pull up, the king would pull up, go see the doctor, his family would see the doctor. And because he doesn't have, you know, health insurance, like American health insurance, so he had to pay the bill in cash. And if you're going to pay in cash, the hospital actually required that you paid in advance. So the king himself, well, he doesn't handle the cash, so he had a money man. And the money man opens up a briefcase right in the medical clinic and is handing out all the cash to one of the employees to pay for everything and leaves. And he's given a handwritten receipt. All right?
Well, Bobby said his sight's too low.
The king was happy he's getting great, great care. And then during the course of an audit, we can't find the cash. So what the hell happened to all this cash that the king's money man given out to one of our employees? So we find out it was actually the manager of the department who herself took it upon herself to collect that cash, all right? And when she went into the system, oddly enough, she didn't indicate that cash was collected. She indicated that it was all done by credit card. Credit card? No, the king doesn't play by credit card. He had his money man come in, he opened up the suitcase. So where was it? So eventually, the supervisor had confessed that there was so much cash that she took the money herself, went into the system, and indicated it was a credit card transaction, hoping that she wouldn't get caught. She stole $50,000. $50,000.
Wow. She should have played the long game like Bobby, 30 bucks at a time.
Hey, look, you know, if we have to contact the king and tell him about this $50,000, I mean, you're going to create an international incident here. And she got really, really scared, and then she finally confessed. But we always had this thing with cash in all the hospitals. It was an interesting problem. I'll tell you, also on rare occasion, and this is a sort of somewhat humorous story, we had this neat case of insurance fraud. Now, you're familiar with this gastric bypass surgery, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, not intimately, thank God, but yes, it sounds ghastly, just like its name. hey, Bruce, why don't we wait until after the top of the hour so that we don't mess up and do like a magic trick and saw your story in half?
Oh, okay. Definitely.
The news people are funny that way. They like to get their news at the top of the hour in. We'll be right back, though. Our guest is Bruce Ackman, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
People riding the fence, you're either riding with us or you're riding with them. Make up your mind which side you stand. If you ask me, this whole world is gone to hell. I speak the truth, but these days the truth won't sell. I bleed red.
give my life. This place called USA.